Bloody Elbow presents Crooklyn's Corner, a hodgepodge of current event topics from the combat sports and entertainment community. Here is your host, Crooklyn, a.k.a. Steffi Haynes.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Crooklyn's Corner. I'm your host, Steffi Haynes, but most of you still know me as Crooklyn. And joining me once again is my bestie, Mr. John Nash. John, how are you?
Oh, now I'm your bestie.
Now you're my
bestie. Now I am.
Yes.
Okay, I'm just kidding. I'm good. Very good. Just, sitting around recovering from another day of a lot of prize fighting.
Yeah. I mean, and the past couple of weekends have just been jam-packed with good fights, especially on the boxing end. And we do have a lot of boxing content to come up.
There goes the listeners just leaving. MMA listeners just leaving right there.
But it's all going to overlap because we have a lot of MMA content too. And it does overlap. So I guess I'll get us started. And I cannot help but want to talk about last night's women's boxing event. Amanda Serrano taking on Katie Taylor. Outstanding fight. The crowd was insanely excited for this event. Everything, I mean, it couldn't have been more perfect. So my question to you is, after last night's historic women's boxing event, what do you think this means for women's boxing going forward? Is this maybe the beginning of a new era where women start seeing more equality, or is this just kind of an anomaly?
Well, we've had moments in the past where there's been Chrissy Martin and Leela Ali, where there was attention to women's boxing, but this felt different. This reminded me more of Cyborg versus Gina Carano.
Yeah.
Where the attention just like it kind of opened everybody's eyes that there really was an audience and you could do something with it. And so I do think that, because not only was that fight great and it delivered and it had a large audience, large eyeballs, but it set up a rematch. So you have a thing to keep the interest going forward. And so we'll get in. And the rematch is going to be huge. And I also think what's going to be interesting about the rematch is that I think, because the way boxing set up and the amount of revenue, that we're going to see very large paydays for these women. And so that'll draw more attention. Now, the next step is we would like to have more names and draws than just them two. We have Clarissa Shields, but she doesn't really have an opponent. If they could get an opponent for her, then you really could see things going. So, but I do think this was the turning point, and now the next step is the tipping point. And we just need the tipping point to keep the momentum going. And I'd also like to see, and I think the tipping point could also be something like changing the rounds to give women the exact same minutes of rounds that men have, instead of 2 minutes to 3 minutes, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I do think we've had a shift, and that we'll see, especially when they can show the numbers that these women are doing and the type of money. I mean, that's what Ronda did. She came in and she's showing that she was doing numbers, pay-per-view sales and stuff that the men were doing. That took it to another level. And I think these two are going to do the same. The next fight's going to be huge.
I have to ask you, how did you have it scored?
I wasn't watching super close, but I honestly think I had it close to a draw, but I think I had Taylor winning barely.
See, I had it for Serrano. I had it 96-94 Serrano, but I could totally understand why they gave it to Taylor. I will not call it a robbery. I will call it one of the best fights I've ever seen. And isn't it beautiful to watch women do really, really beautiful technical work?
Isn't it beautiful to watch women beat the crap out of each other? Because at the end of that, they look just... They were just bloodied as could be. Do you ever see that? There's an old classic footage, boxing photo from 1920. I can't remember who's in it. Is it Jack Brighton or something? But two smaller weight fighters, and they just are bruised to hell, and they've colorized it some often. So they just look just bloodied and bruised to hell. And I was thinking, like, that was the two of them at the end. That was the modern appearance of that.
Right, but the actual skill and technique in the boxing itself was gorgeous.
Oh, it was good. Yeah, that was high quality striking.
Body work and Katie's counter left. My God, Jesus, it was just amazing. So I have to slobber over that fight a little bit, but we must move on.
Okay.
give me your honest take on Jake Paul's promotional ability. Now, I know he has partners that actually take on the backroom work and that he's the face, most importantly. But Amanda is singing his praises and saying that this could not have happened without him. So I need your take on this.
Well, he has a partner. Nikisa Badarian is kind of his manager for Jake Paul, and he's kind of the money guy, and he deserves a lot of the credit. But Jake Paul, I mean, I'll criticize a lot of his attention grabbing, and I think a lot of his grandstanding about fighter pay, as much as, you know, as people probably know, I'm a big supporter of fighter pay, you know, increasing fighter pay. But a lot of the stuff he does, I think, is just like, okay, this is just attention seeking. This is not really doing stuff. But as a promoter, I won't stop complimenting that guy. Not only is he amazing at promoting himself, and his whole strategy of gathering attention no matter what works great for that, but he can promote himself great. But he did a great job of building. I mean, I don't want to oversell, because the two fighters, the women themselves, have interesting stories, and they are like great fighters. And there's a lot going for them. But his ability to draw attention, basically like, hey, look at me, now turn the spotlight on them. And that works wonders in the sport.
He did something that none of the other promoters have been able to do thus until now. You know,
yeah,
I mean, the fight to make in the 90s was Christy Martin and Lucia Riker, and they could not get it done. That would have been the equivalent of this. And they couldn't get it done.
Yeah, I think part of it is that with the traditional, you know, male boxing promoters, is that it's because there is such a small margin of profit and stuff, that you can't really take the risk and invest long term into women's boxing because there's not a payoff. But for him, he makes so much money on so much other stuff. And, you know, he's looking for attention. He's doing all this other stuff that can build up his value and pawn off crappy crypto and NFT to people. That's half a scam, apparently. But he has the kind of a luxury, but also goes hand in hand with that, because it's like, if it doesn't work out on the boxing promotion side, I will have still made money and stuff off the attention that comes from it. And so I think that might have been the secret. I can't say for sure, because I don't know the numbers behind the scene and what their business strategy was. But that does seem like part of it. Like the other guys, because the traditional boxing is like, it's like they're terrified of putting the risk into it because there might not be a payoff in the end.
Bob Arum said in an interview last night that he thinks boxing is moving away from the pay-per-view model and more to the streaming model. Now, do you agree with this? And further, do you think an offer has been made or is currently being negotiated for Top Rank right now, maybe with some streaming service? Could it be that HBO is looking to get back into the business and maybe putting boxing on HBO Go as opposed to big HBO?
I mean, it's possible. I'll have to call around. I mean, I know they were looking for an investor partner. They were, you know, Top Rank was up for sale, but really they weren't trying to sell the whole company. What they're trying to do is get someone to buy a portion of it that could be a partner to build the sport, mostly overseas, I think their interest was. Because they saw that, you know, for China and Macau and the Asian area. But that was a couple of years ago. But I wouldn't be surprised. I'll have to make some calls and, you know, see if there's any rumors going around on that front.
It just seemed very, very suspicious to me that he would say something like that. Just sounded to me like some big streaming giant maybe is already dangling a carrot for him.
Well, he's signed to a long-term agreement still with ESPN and ESPN Plus. And part of it was, I don't think pay-per-view is going away. It's for boxing. It really works because if you're the draw, the only way you can really finance the top draws, the money they want, is by charging the fans, because you cannot get the mass audience you could for regular stick and ball sports, but you get an audience that's used to paying. So for them, I could see pay-per-view, I think, is always going to stick around. But for Arum, in some ways, I don't know how serious he is or if he's basically, you know, selling the fact that he has a bunch of attraction draw stars, but none of them are real pay-per-view attractions except for maybe Tyson Fury. Lomachenko, he's going to have Haney for a couple fights. He's got Shakur Stevenson. These are name boxers, but none of them are proven commodities as pay-per-view sellers yet. So I wonder if part of it was just him kind of just saying that to, like, well, I don't really have pay-per-view draws, so let's pretend, you know, let's just say pay-per-view is dead.
Yeah, that's true. Floyd Mayweather, he has not paid Logan Paul. They discussed this last night in the post-event pressers. And it's, you know, this was last year that they had their exhibition match, and we are in month five of the next year. What repercussions, if any, can Floyd face, and just how bad are his finances again, since this is not the first time that he's had money problems and has left people hanging and unpaid?
Well, I'm not sure he has money problems, and I know he paid Paul the original purse payment and everything, because that goes in escrow. But what's not been paid is the back end that was part of the deal. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the full details, because it could have been that Logan Paul thinks he's owed something, and basically Heyman and Floyd Mayweather took him for a ride and set it up in a weird way, like, oh yeah, I'm sorry, there was no profits made because I had such a large, you know, guarantee. I don't know, but I'm looking forward. I got an expectation is Logan Paul will file a lawsuit. We might get some details on the contracts and stuff, what was expected from that lawsuit, and then we'll see what really happened. But it's not like Logan Paul didn't get paid anything. It's just he's not getting the large sum of back-end money he expected. And I'd have to see how that was set up, because it might be that he just wasn't careful enough and Floyd Mayweather set up kind of like a, you know, Hollywood accounting where it's a rolling profit. It's a rolling gross. And if all the money's going to Floyd, that means there's nothing left over to be paid to anyone else.
All right. Now, Eddie Hearn, let's talk about him for a second, because he's the other big guy that's been the center of attention this week. He went on record saying that he admired the way the UFC ran their operation. Now, do you think we ever see a scenario where boxing takes on some of the UFC's less appealing traits, namely their contract structure and or their revenue split?
Well, the contracts wouldn't be that much different, because actually boxing has a lot of like restrictive provisions in the contracts. The difference is, boxing can't use like the titles as an enticement to get you to sign that long-term contract. And so when you become a star in boxing, it's not like they go, oh, to fight for the WBO belt, now you got to sign this new agreement that's just as coercive as the previous one. They're like, no, I'm a star, I'll sign a one or two fight deal. Where in MMA, not only do you have that kind of that early boxer contract where they can extend it and get more out of you, it's like, oh, now you're getting in a position where you're a contender and you want to fight for the title, now we'll throw even a more coercive contract at you. So the contract issue, I don't think, you know, boxing has very restrictive contracts. It's just you have no leverage because they don't own the titles. The difference, but I do think, yeah, I mean, I listened to his interview with Helwani, and it's obvious, and I don't think that's it makes sense for he bases a lot of what he does on the UFC. Because the leverage of making himself the star, making the brand the product, means that they, you know, that they generate sales without the need for the fighters, which makes them more profit. So I can understand that, but it makes sense as a business sense for him. But it's for boxers. I mean, I'm sure you don't really want to hear your promoter saying we're trying to make us more important than you, and I don't think it's going to fully work, because it's just there. You don't have the control in boxing that you do in MMA.
What are your thoughts on Kamaru Usman's extremely embarrassing call out of Canelo and Canelo's subsequent smackdown?
That was embarrassing. And none of it makes sense. And I have my suspicions who really wrote those tweets.
Actually, he didn't. Ali did not write those tweets.
He did. Well, maybe not, because actually the grammar in them were pretty good.
Yeah, and also I've spoken to Kamaru, and he does not – Ali doesn't have access to his account. He's actually tweeted about it, he tweeted directly to Khabib to get his account back from Ali, that you can't just let Ali have the account. I'll share that with you, because it's been retweeted thousands of times. But yeah, I know for a fact that he made those tweets himself.
Well, that's even more embarrassing, because you're calling out, you're challenging the boxer and saying, you need to fight me the big money day, the payday that everybody wants to see. And you guys also got to be more like MMA, the sport I'm trying to leave to go box to make a big payday. So it's like, you know, I mean, it was funny. He was telling Stephen Espinosa, you need to take notes from Dana White. And I'm sure, like, Stephen Espinosa's first note should, don't pay this guy much to box. You know, so I thought that was hilarious. And And just there's no point in Usman calling out this fight because Canelo Alvarez has no interest in it. And it's funny because people say Usman's actually kind of a draw. You look at his numbers in against the right opponent. He does very excellent numbers in MMA. But I detect no interest in seeing Canelo fight him. And on top of that, Canelo's options in boxing probably would do bigger numbers, pay better. So it's like, why would he consider boxing Usman when he has these opponents lined up in boxing like Golovkin, like, you know, going after and unifying the light heavyweight titles or going back down to, you know, super middleweight and taking David Benavidez. Those fights would be mega numbers more than they would Usman and elevate his career, his legacy. The difference, like Fury is Ngannou, just talking to casual fans and people I know to get a sense of what the reaction is, that would sell.
Yeah.
It's not going to do Mayweather-McGregor numbers, but it would sell.
Well, Mayweather-McGregor numbers is close to 3 million or a little over 3 million. I think that Fury and Ngannou would easily top a million.
Yeah, I think it would do numbers comparable, at the minimum, conservatively comparable to what the second Fury-Wilder fight did.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, for Fury, it's like, okay, it's a less risky fight. This will pay as much as me fighting another major heavyweight. And I get a bigger cut because it's an MMA guy that's going to be happy taking the small cut.
Oh, man, that's so sad.
It is, but for Ngannou's point of view, it's like, oh, I got a guaranteed $20 million. I'll be happy with that.
Yeah. Speaking of Francis, part of his demand for this new negotiation for a new contract is that he wants this boxing match with Tyson Fury worked into the contract. Do you think that happens?
I don't think so, but who knows? The UFC might. They might agree to it and say it's better to have him come back to the UFC, fight as a UFC fighter MMA instead of losing the heavyweight championship to outside. But I think the big thing is his management and subs, they do not want to give, even if there is a boxing thing, they do not want to give the UFC a cut or much of a cut. Mm. And the rumor with McGregor was to get that deal, the UFC to sign off on it, is he had to give up 50% of his, you know, Mayweather split. I don't see, they might give the UFC something, a small percentage, you know, in boxing often they'll have a contract. If they lose a purse bid, the promoter gets like 20%. You know, but when you get big enough stars, often you get nothing on the purse bid. But for Ngannou, they might do something like that and say, hey, listen, we want your input. We want you part of the promotion, but it's only going to be a very small percentage of the split that you get. Hmm.
Now, I keep seeing people talk about boxing as this dying sport, Kamaru Usman included, which that was one of the funniest parts of that whole series of tweets, is that he talked about a dying sport, but this is a guy that's lobbying for a fight in that dying sport.
Yeah, let me fight in your loser sport.
Exactly. Now, I think that it's thriving right now. How do you see things?
No, I think it is. It's absolutely, I mean, it had, during the pandemic, the heart of the pandemic, boxing was terrible.
Right.
It really was just in the gutters. It made sense. No sport was holding events. But during that summer, Top Rank was putting on some of the worst cards I've ever seen on ESPN. I mean, it was like just pure regional boxing. And then a lot of the big fights didn't happen. And it makes sense because boxers, you know, they make so much a cut of everything. A lot of the bigger names didn't want to be in the big fights because it's like, well, there's no gate. And that's millions of dollars out of my pocket if we don't have a gate. So I'm not going to do it. So it fell in, and MMA had a pretty amazing run the UFC did during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. There was a large stretch of just great cards. But, you know, it's everything's cyclical, and I think boxing's kind of made its comeback. And right now we are in the grips of just a streak of just amazing fights, mm-hmm. entertaining fights, and big ones. You know, when people say the best never fight the best in boxing, I'm like, you're not paying attention at all because
right?
Every week it's number one versus number two.
Yeah. I mean, it is crazy how all of the good fights. I mean, just look at last night. My God.
Yeah, we had Shakur Stevenson, the current number one ranked junior lightweight, versus Valdez, the previous number one, who only is not number one because he had a a drug test issue that he wasn't stripped or anything, but he lost it. You know, it's a long winded thing. Go look it up. But anyways, but really it's the number one and two guy in their weight class taking on each other. And on the opposite side, you have the two best women in their weight class, the best number one featherweight versus the number one lightweight fighting in a unification or a super fight. So that's just one weekend. We had the two best.
Yeah. And we've got Canelo coming up soon.
Yeah, so you got the number one pound for pound or number, you know, the number one super middleweight going up to take on the number two, not number one, but number two light heavyweight.
Right.
So it's every week, though, we've been getting that, these top fights against each other. So when people say it's the best, don't fight the best, it's like you're kind of, you know, you're a little outdated. You're missing what's going on right now. You're not paying attention, obviously. And financially, it's going gangbusters. They're selling out huge stadiums. There's money involved. There's, you know, pay-per-view sales are, you know, actually they're pretty good. They're solid. Maybe not as high as some of the UFC events, but they've been very solid. And they're getting huge revenue from TV sources, broadcasters.
Yeah. Let's talk about the NFL. And I know our listeners are going to be like, what? But the NFL did something unusual this past week. They bought shares in Endeavor. And for those of you that don't know, Endeavor is the UFC's parent company. Can you expand on that for our listeners and why it might have happened?
Well, the NFL is an investment vehicle as part of the NFL. This is the NFL league and the owners, not like the players or anything. Right. So the NFL league, diversify the income and stuff. They take some of the money they make as a league and they put it, invest it in various properties, and they put money into Endeavor. And so that makes them part owners of the UFC. I mean, I don't read much into it beyond the fact that but it does show, I think, that something, a lot of people look at the UFC, the Endeavor as either a safe stock or a stock that has potential growth.
Okay. Then let me go a little further. Variety recently put out an article, and I saw that you had responded to and retweeted this, but Variety put out an article recently that basically said that Endeavor might need to go private again. Why is that?
Well, that I was going to bring that up. Good. Thank you for bringing that up. Is that the Variety's argument is because Endeavor needs to show profit, and they've been so far been telling their investors, we're not going to have a profit. We're focused on growing the business. But because a lot of stocks now, people are turning against that model. They want to show a profitable company. They're not as trustworthy as they were in the past, that there's future growth available to some of these investments. So the argument of that writer was that Endeavor might have to show more growth for the investors, because otherwise investors will be upset and they won't be investing in their stock and their stock value will go down. And so the only way that you can continue being a company that's not focused on profit would be as a private enterprise. And that's why they were saying they might have to go private again. I'm not certain if I buy that. I don't know I'm not certain I buy the logic, but I understand what she's getting at.
One championship. We got to talk one championship because they just signed a streaming deal with Amazon to broadcast at least 12 cards a year. Tell us a little bit about that deal, what you know or what you suspect.
Well, I mean, I'd heard some rumblings that they were going to sign with Amazon for a while.
I went back on your timeline. You've been talking about this for almost 2 months.
Yeah, well, I'd heard rumblings about it, that they were looking at Amazon, and it made so much sense that then it hit me like, okay, it's going to be Amazon no matter what. Supposedly, they'd gotten offers, too, from a few other potential places to air it, broadcasters, like a more traditional cable or network. I'm not sure what it was, but even if someone told me they're offering more money, but they chose Amazon. And what it does, it allows them, they now have an American broadcaster. You can see them, you know, they had YouTube before, but now that an American platform, they're going to show 12 events per year. The question I have is how much Amazon support they're going to get. That'll be the big thing. How much does Amazon advertise and push it, right? Are they partners or are they just going to be on the Amazon Prime platform? Because that, you know, that's good, but it's not that big a deal if Amazon's not out there supporting you and pushing it, right? So the other question is how much they making. And they, you know, Chatri supposedly told someone that it's an eight-figure deal, which is at least $10 million. Well, for 5 years, that's only $2 million a year. And I heard from other sources it's about in that ballpark, like $2.5 million a year, maybe $3 million, but half what they were getting from Bleacher Report. So it's good for them that it looks good.
Can we back up, please?
Yeah. Yes.
You said half what they were getting from Bleacher Report.
Yeah, the Bleacher Report TNT deal was supposedly $5 million a year, about.
Wow, really?
Supposedly. I mean, you know, I'm not.
I was not aware that Bleacher Report was balling like that.
Yeah. And that's why I don't think they were very happy with it, too, the results. So.
Okay.
So that's why they didn't re-sign them. So, but yeah, about $2.5-3 million, I guess I heard. So about half. But when you look at it. Okay, first of all, it's good that they're an American broadcaster because that looks great because they have an American broadcaster now and they can tell everybody that. And it's also beneficial to them because they are kind of secretive about their numbers, is that it's not on network broadcast where you can go look at the ratings, the actual viewers. It's concealed because it's streaming. But I'm not sure it's a great deal for them because you're now locked 5 years at a very low rate. Mm-hmm. American broadcast deal, a few million a year is not a great deal. For your broadcast deal.
And there is no extrication from an Amazon deal.
Yeah, so you got 5 years on Amazon at a few million a year when the UFC is making, you know, $300 million a year from their ESPN deal. From we don't know what Bellator is getting from Showtime because it's owned by Viacom, but on DAZN, they were getting $35 million a year. So,
wow.
So you're looking, yes, $35 million a year about. So $3 million, that's a very low rate. And you're going to be stuck on that for 5 years. You'd think you'd want like a 2-year deal at a low rate, just prove that you can get big ratings and then come back and sign a much bigger deal. So I'm not sure how great that is for them.
You know, you said Bellator, $35 million. And my immediate knee-jerk reaction was how awesome that sounded. But it only, now that I think about it for a second, it only sounds good when compared to one. But when compared to the UFC and Bellator is supposed to be the number two organization, my goodness, they're not even making half.
Well, you're much lower than that even, yeah.
I would estimate about a tenth.
Yeah, it's actually a little over than the tenth, but they have no pay-per-view. So you're making a little more than one tenth, probably, you know, you're making probably 12-13%, maybe 15% max what the UFC is getting for their ESPN, ESPN Plus deal. But the UFC on top of that is also running pay-per-views, and you're not running pay-per-views.
Man, my goodness. All right. Let's talk about Bellator's issues with DAZN because their business operations guy went on Ariel's show and was revealing some details about DAZN and the pandemic and everything else. So can you expand on that a little for us?
Well, according to him, the whole thing that ended the deal was just the pandemic and everybody was happy. I mean, that's probably true. The pandemic is what ended the deal. That DAZN could not hold events. They didn't have, you know, because of the pandemic stuff couldn't go forward and they cut the deals. But I know from fact, from talking to people at Belt, they did not want that deal to end right away because they were paying $35 million a year. Mm-hmm. So I also think it's that DAZN used the excuse of the pandemic to get out of these big fight because they made a huge push on, you know, Bellator and boxing with Matchroom into the American market. And it hadn't quite worked out the way they wanted. So I think they used the pandemic as an excuse to cut those deals back, to pare it back and let Bellator go. And Bellator's like, okay, we've always had a follow-up plan to go to Showtime. Eventually we'll execute that earlier. But I mean, I don't think anybody's particularly furious. Like they probably do still get along, but I don't think that was the plan by Bellator, like, you know, to leave DAZN right away.
Thoughts on Triller's deal with Bare Knuckle FC, because I cannot wrap my head around that at all. And further, I want to know how long Ryan Kavanaugh is going to be able to keep rounding up funding before people finally realize there's never going to be a return on investment with his ventures.
Well, they seem to be finding about soon. They have a SPAC merger with another company that seems to be running into trouble. So I don't know what's in the future for Triller, but I don't. The future of Triller, I guess the whole thing is I do not know. They've been spending money like drunken sailors, mm-hmm. which is to kind of prove they're doing something. But eventually someone's going to draw the line and say, we can't keep spending this. And I'm not sure what the return on BKFC is. You know, it draws attention, which is probably their own intent. They get eyeballs, but there's no way for what they're spending and stuff. I don't see bare knuckle fighting as the future of combat sports. I can't see that in any shape or form competing, not just with the UFC, but in even the second, third MMA promotion. It's just not going to do those kind of numbers. So, I mean, it might work now because it gets attention and you don't have to pay as much as, you know, like a Bellator or PFL to get the top guys, you know, to get the next tier down. But my guess is, you know, they might have enough money, whatever, run a couple more years. But after that, I just cannot see them still being in this business.
Arjun Buller recently talked about sunset provisions and credits. Can you lay out what that terminology means?
Okay, sunset provisions are the end date of a contract. So when you have a contract, the point where it terminates no matter what, that would be the sunset provision. So it can't run forever. It can't run perpetuity and perpetually like they do in a perpetuity, like they do now with a lot of MMA contracts did. So before you'd have a UFC contract and you don't want to fight and you'd stop fighting, well, they could extend it forever. Well, with the sunset provision, after a certain time period, the contract terminates. And that's what he was talking about because he was talking about Francis Ngannou. Mm-hmm. Ngannou's contract has a sunset provision. Every contract I've seen since 2017 on the UFC has a sunset provision. And so it allows fighters to have an end date. And I give Buehler credit too. He credits the right people. He credits Nate Quarry and John Fitch and Kung Lee and all those guys because it's pretty obvious that the antitrust lawsuit is what compelled the UFC to put these sunset provisions in their contract, giving fighters an option. It's not perfect, but giving them a chance that instead of being stuck in that contract forever, that after a 5-year period, they can actually exit it and get a deal like Ngannou's going to do. So when he was talking about, that's what he was talking about, that his contract with ONE did not have a sunset provision. It was going to be extended forever. And so he came back, ended up re-signing with ONE, a new deal they came to. But because of Ngannou, that's now in the UFC contracts of sunset provisions. And I bet you people are demanding of them in Bellator, ONE, PFL. They're asking for the same thing in those other contracts because the UFC is the market leader. So if the UFC does it, they're going to ask that the other promotions do it.
What are the credits? Because he specifically talked about the provisions and the credits. What are the credits?
I'm not sure what he means by credits, yeah. Unless he's talking about crediting the right people that did it.
Okay. I just was a little confused on that because it all sounds very finance oriented. So I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't missing something there.
You got to remember, he's got a Canadian accent. Those guys don't make sense.
All right. My final question for you is if there are any updates or expected updates for either of the antitrust suits.
Well, we had a recent decision in another case, an appeal, in what we call the Tuna case, about how class certification worked in that case. In that case, because the UFC cited that case in a motion, we assume the judge was waiting for that one to be decided. So now that that's cleared up, everybody's fully expects that within a matter of who knows what, a couple of days, a couple of weeks, whatever, that he will finally issue the written opinion for class certification. After that happens, then the original case, Kung Lee's versus Zuppa, can progress and go into, and Zuppa can file an appeal and we can start moving forward on that. But until that written opinion happens, nothing happens. So basically for the last year, we've been frozen in amber and now it's unfrozen and the case can progress like we thought it would a year ago.
And Rob Mazey is still active on this, right?
Yeah, he's still an attorney on the case, still operating the MMAFA.
Awesome. He's a good guy, so they got the right one.
Yeah, he's on Twitter, driving me nuts, so I'm just kidding. He's a very passionate guy about this. But I will say, it is nice that Buehler and some other people, actually the last few weeks, I've been super impressed with Ngannou, Arjun Buehler and Sterling's interviews.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing a much more informed fighters than it was just even a few years ago.
Well, Aljamain has been tooting this horn for several years. And for the longest time, I feel like the UFC, even to this day, punished him for it by burying him on cards. I mean, his fight with Jan, the second one, the rematch, that was his very first co-main event spot. This is the freaking bantamweight champion of the world, and that was his first co-main. He has never co-main evented a fight until that fight. I mean, they buried him so far on the cards, going all the way back to 2016, because he dared to speak out on fighter pay. And after that, they just buried him deeper and deeper, matched him up with, you know, just the Johnny Eduardos and people like that.
Yeah, well, I should be specific. It's not that he just didn't talk about fighter pay, which he has in the past and other guys, but those three fighters in a row were very informative about it. They were paying attention to details that fighters in the past were not aware of. Like, they would say, oh, we deserve more money, but now they bring up specific things where he talked about the percentage split and the revenue and the earnings of Zuffa. Yeah. Or Buehler was talking about the antitrust lawsuit and the sunset provision, or Ngannou was talking about similar stuff. So it's I agree. Yeah, Sterling, there's been several fighters that have stepped out and said stuff about fighter pay. But what was super impressed about those three is they were very informed and knowledgeable about the subject now, where I didn't see that in the past.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. Especially Buller. Man, I watched that interview and he's really informed.
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't be shocked and surprised, because a lot of fighters are smart guys, yeah. But they usually don't talk that openly about it. So
exactly, and that's the problem, is we don't get open discussion like that where they're talking contract material. Most of them won't say boo about their contracts.
Yeah, one of it is that there's a large number of fighters just don't pay attention to that. That's just something they just don't think about. But then there's the other group of fighters, they just don't want to talk about it publicly. You know, not, and people are all, because it's private, they don't want to share the information. That's might be part of it, but the number one reason is they're just kind of intimidated at what's going to reaction be from the promoters.
That's exactly what it is. And is there language in the contracts that specifically denies them from revealing details?
Well, yeah, there is language that says you're not supposed to share any information with anybody outside of, you know, Zuffa and your attorney. But remember, Dana White's come forward and said fighters are free to talk about anything about their money, anything. And so that would supersede anything in the contract. He's given verbal permission to fighters to talk about it. So if fighters want to, there's nothing they can do about it. But it's also the fact that, yes, maybe legally they can't take action, but there's, you know, the powers that be have a lot of power.
Yeah. Yeah. They can, when Dana made that statement, he made it publicly. There's video of it. I mean, it can never be taken back.
No. And it was very clear what he said. So.
Yep. Well, all right, John, I've exhausted my question list for this round. We are definitely going to revisit in a couple of weeks and do another round. But what I want to do for you right now is give you a moment to tell everybody what you have going on and where we can find you on social media.
Well, on social media, you can find me on Twitter at HeyNotTheFace. What I have going on, I have a Care Don't Care show, which I just keep demolishing my opposition on that show.
We tied. We are currently tied.
I'll have to double check that. I'll have to check that with Bean Finley.
You always have to double check things when either I win or we're
close. I find that hard to believe that I didn't win again. That's one. I have a podcast called If the Shoe Fits. It's not about MMA, but it's about more like PR and politics. So you can check that out if you want. It's Tuesday nights. Me, Eugene S. Robinson, Alexi Old, and Not Kid Nate. And then finally, I have a couple video articles I'm working on. I should have been done with them a couple weeks ago, but I'm still working on them because I'm lazy, slow, whatever. But hopefully they'll be out, you know, the first one shortly and then another one a couple weeks after that.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to the next time we have you on, because there's bound to be more to talk about. I mean, it seems like every day we're getting new stuff. It's been a juicy couple of months for news, especially finance news. Man, it must be like an avalanche for you.
Yeah, I just stopped paying attention.
And on that fine note, we're going to go ahead and wrap up the show. So until next time, please stay safe.
thank you for listening to this Bloody Elbow Presents production. To check out more of our content, hop over to the Bloody Elbow Presents SoundCloud and iTunes pages, as well as subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is titled Bloody Elbow Presents. We are also on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Player FM, and Amazon Music. Just search for Bloody Elbow Presents, and you will get brand new shows throughout the week, including Care Don't Care, The Mookie and Crookie Show, The MMA Vivisection, The Level Change Podcast, The Sixth Round Post-Fight Show, Sixth Round Retro, The MMA Depressed Us, Crooklyn's Corner, Exclusive Fighter Interviews, Show Money, and radio-style play-by-play for every UFC pay-per-view. Be sure to also follow us on Twitter, at Bloody Elbow, Facebook at facebook.com/bloodyelbowblog, and as always, on bloodyelbow.com.